And getting it together can be a very long, hard road sometimes. Does DNA write our destinies, or can nurture triumph over nature? What is it that determines who we really are? And that's paraphrasing a trade description of Caroline Barron's memoir, Rapiro Beach. It's a story of a glamorous life that nearly ended in childbirth and a search for whakapapa that is always a search for ourselves, really. Caroline Barron is an Auckland writer, award-winning, a number of awards, a board member of the Michael King Writers' Centre. Rapiro Beach, we'll get to in our conversation, with its golden dunes that helped her find herself again. Hello, Caroline.
Hello, Jim.
Kia ora, nice to talk to you. A woman tries to regather the threads of a life that has come undone, and I think that's paraphrasing the publisher's blurb from memory. If I were describing your book in a sentence, the sentence might be, as a bloke, that what I related to most is what a lot of people will be going through right now, or will be about to, maybe some of them, the unravelling of a relatively comfortable and relatively ordered life, which can happen because of all manner of traumas. And then what do you do about it? Is that fair as a general description?
I think that's really insightful, actually. A really great description, because it's really hard to put your own book, a synopsis of your own book, in one sentence. So, yeah, well done. That's great.
Oh, good. Okay. You had a joyous sort of young OE in London working for L'Oreal. You later parlayed that into running a modelling agency in Auckland. In fact, at age 24, you had a big and international at times business going, didn't you?
Correct, I did. I owned Nova Models and Talent for almost a decade, from 23 onwards. And that was a business that I took over from Maisie Bestall Cohen, who many of your listeners will know as being a doyen of the fashion industries through the 70s, 80s and beyond. But it was a very, very intense business to own at a young age, incredibly fun, but certainly challenging too.
Yes, and that's all laid out in the book. And I'm trying to emphasise the contrast between the glamour and vivacity of that world and then what came. You met your husband, Jez, you married him. Everything was very sweet, or at least, you know, as sweet as it is for most people. Then you almost died during the birth of your second child, hemorrhaging.
I describe it in the book as the before part of life being described as sort of imbued with a golden sort of hue of joy and fabulousness and fun and ease. And then the after period following Hazel's birth felt like it was kind of browns and greens and shadows and darkness. So yeah, it was so contrasted. It was a really difficult time.
You required 15 litres of blood.
I did. And that's actually three bodies full of blood. So my whole blood three times over. And there's actually a photo in the book, which I still can't stand really looking at, which was taken of Hazel and I soon after coming to in the ICU. Mm. You can just see from how puffy my face is and my lips and my cheeks and the fear in my eyes, you know, what I'd been through.
Before that photo, you thought that you were dying.
I did. I remember hemorrhaging in post-op and rushing through those doors back into surgery. And just before I passed out, thinking, wow, surely this isn't over. You know, it can't be over. I've only just begun. Mm-hmm. It was a terrifying, terrifying thought when I had a 19-month-old baby at home, Georgia, and had just given birth to beautiful Hazel.
Yeah. You didn't feel quite right. I think the phrase in the book is like morning fog obscuring rooftops. What sort of state did you sink into? Can you describe it?
I was pretty miserable. I couldn't really believe that I was home after a week in hospital after nearly dying with my toddler and my newborn, having to take care of them. I felt empty. I felt broken. And I guess soon after that was the back pain that I experienced for a year or so. So that was within about a year of giving birth to Hazel. And so for that year as well, I was on heavy opiates. I was on tramadol and gabapentin for the pain. It was overwhelming.
I know that you had a very serious version of childbirth, but you also in the book illuminate the facts and the consequences of childbirth, difficult childbirth generally, that can be just glossed over by society, don't you?
It can. And it's been really interesting, Jim, with this book now out in the world, the number of women, some that I know, but many that I don't know, who have contacted me through social media or email and told me their own stories. And from that, I can only tell you that it's there and it happens and it's not as uncommon as we think. And yet, women don't talk about it. The variety of stories that I'm hearing as a response to Ruapehu Beach, it's almost like it's giving people permission to talk and to share those stories. And we all wander around in the world with our friends and our whānau and our colleagues and our associates, probably not really knowing what's made them who they are. So I think that's the beauty of old friends. That's the beauty of family, is that you know all of those depths of people. But what this whole experience has taught me is to be more accepting and understanding and patient with people, and probably take more note of people's mental health and changes in their sort of personality, and knowing that what they're perhaps angry or upset about isn't really the thing that they're angry or upset about, that there's more beneath.
Actually, the bloke who wrote the words, English words to our national anthem, wrote a poem called Not Understood. And I've always remembered that one because it applies to so many people.
I must check it out. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Let's get back to your book, though. You embarked on a search for your dad's birth family and details you didn't know. Why?
Well, I think when you have children, you are drawn to finding out where you came from, who you are, your identity, your medical history. And when someone in your family, and in this case my father, has been adopted out, you don't necessarily know that background. It was pretty harrowing, really, some of the things that I found out.
Yeah, it's not like thumbing through details on Ancestry.com, is it? The history you uncovered was in part quite dark and distressing. What was the most shocking of the revelations that you found about your family? What was the one that you thought, oh my God, most?
The most shocking piece that I found out was that my birth grandfather, Montague, died in Mount Eden prison of a heart attack. He was in prison because of a violent assault. But the fact that he died of a heart attack, then of course, after my father dying at 50 of a heart attack, I just started to think, what does this mean for me? And a really serious fear of death started taking over my life. I just couldn't help but think that I was going to be next.
Yeah, and there were other reasons for that fear in what you found out as well. But you spend 6 years trying to make sense of a rage that you cannot explain properly. Not just a rage, but that was part of it.
Oh, indeed. Yes, I remember some awful mothering moments with my children where I would just lose it over nothing. And I'm sure many women out there can relate to this, that, you know, you snap and then you look at yourself in the mirror and you think, who am I? Who is this woman and why am I being so awful? And what we've all got to remember is that somewhere inside is the you that was before. And you might never be that person again, but there is certainly a way through in which to become a new version of yourself that's not that angry, horrible mother.
Let's talk about finding the better version of yourself. The book is Ruapehu Beach, and we're talking to Caroline Barron. So you're in a terrible mental state, really. You've got young daughters to look after. Why did you begin to think the answers for you lay in your family history?
I was looking for a way to explain myself by searching into the past and hunting through that family history. It didn't really help at all. It just made things worse. And so I had to continue to search through other ways. You know, I was in doctor's surgeries and went to osteopaths and chiropractors. And this seems to be a bit of a theme amongst women. We bounce around these medical rooms all through the city and we try and figure out ourselves, and we often can't. And we're left just thinking, what is wrong with me?
Yes. And also thinking that in your case, maybe you've got an ancestry that grips you and won't let go, you know, the spirits of the past. And we find this fanciful, don't we? We think it's just maybe we've inherited a few genes, not ghosts. But you have quite a close encounter with the past, really, don't you?
I did. And it's incredible how the past can leak into the present in bad ways and in good ways.
So you discover you are part Māori. How do you find that out?
I was really lucky, actually. There has been a lot of research done into the Stanaway family tree. In fact, John James Stanaway, who was my great-great-great-grandfather, there are over 15,000 descendants of this man, and there have been two family history books written about it. So once I had the name Montague Stanaway, I could quickly sort of unravel who he was and figure out who he was, and in turn figure out what the lineage was that went back. And John James Stanaway was an Englishman who arrived on a ship at Kohukohu in the Hokianga. His English wife died on the way over during childbirth. So he arrived with this baby in his arms in this tiny kauri gum and kauri timber settlement on the Hokianga with a baby. And so what's to be done? He was partnered with the daughter of a Māori chief called Mohe Te Hokaanga II, and his daughter's name and my three great grandmother, my great 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 grandmother's name, was Witaparane Minarapa, and that's how I discovered that was the line that I am descended from on my father's birth father's side.
Yeah, in fact, one of your ancestors signed the treaty, which is interesting.
Yes.
What an emphatic revelation. So that is really interesting for most Kiwis, that they could make a discovery like that. Just condensing everything in terms of time frame and your search, tell us the provenance of the title of your book, Rapiro Beach, because we're getting close to that geographically now with what you're talking about.
Well, many people are familiar with Bailey's Beach on the west coast of the North Island, but not a lot of people know that piece of coastline, which is 107 stunning kilometres of beach, runs from Poto in the south up to Maunganui Bluff, which is just before the Hokianga in the north. And that stretch of land is called Rapiro Beach, in a place that became over time really important to me and to my family.
Full name, Rapiro Waka Te Hawa, the unfinished canoe, which is kind of you as you search.
Beautifully put.
And the bones of old ships. And it's our longest drivable beach, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's actually a legal highway, which, you know, is such a New Zealand thing, isn't it?
So what did you do there? Can you explain that from the book too?
Yeah. So in 2016, and this is kind of where it gets interesting, because at that point I'd been really writing only what had happened to the past, and I thought that was the whole story, really. But then, as a family, we went north, and we were looking for a place to have a holiday batch. And we went to a whole lot of different places in the area. We went to Tinapai and Whakapiro. We basically drew a little circle on the map within 3 hours of Auckland and thought we'd go exploring and see what our budget could find us. And we found this house that is called Big Tree, which was for sale. And we just fell in love, and we ended up making it work and buying this house, and that was about August 2016. So we've been up there about 4 years now, and we feel that it's our Tūranga Waiwai for so many reasons.
But it's your Tūranga Waiwai for, we can guess, more reasons than it just being a nice family home, yeah?
Yes. So with my Stanaway research, I had read a lot about the Hokianga kind of area, But it wasn't until we had bought Big Tree that I came to understand that this was all the area of my Māori ancestors. And that was just incredible to realise that the connection that I'd felt with that place was more than just a connection to a place. It went back further than that, that it was almost as if I was being called back to a place that I didn't even know I was, you know, was the place of my ancestors. So it was a very, very strange realisation. And to know that my three great-grandfather, the John James Stanaway, who arrived on the ship, he's buried at the on the hill at Tokatoka Cemetery, and he was the harbour master there.
I don't want to give away too much of the journey because it's also a detective story, but that more than most things in your recovery was what helped you glue the broken pieces of yourself together again. What has helped most?
Well, definitely Ripiro Beach and having a place to be and a place to stand as a family has been wonderful, but also getting help, raising my hand and finding the right kind of treatment that I needed. And it took far too long for this to happen. It took 6 years for me to receive the help that I needed, and I would hate to think that there's anyone else out there that is going through this, that it would take 6 years for them to find help. There is a lot more than just the physical to a person, and the treatment that I ended up having was for trauma, for PTSD, and it's called EMDR therapy, and that was incredibly helpful in my healing. And what a lot of people don't understand about PTSD, which is far more common than we'd ever know, is that it is an injury. It is not a disease. It is an injury, and an injury can be healed.
Ripiro Beach, a memoir of life after near death. Caroline Barron is with us. Do you think, I don't want to go too far out on a limb here, but do you think all of us have a discovery of some sort waiting at a beach or a marae or in some unprepossessing old house in the suburbs or in hospital records or court jock documents or wherever that would heal us? Because this is one big takeaway from your book, that whatever happens in life that is agonising and lingering, there may be history that will shine a light.
Oh, Jim, that's a great question. Well, firstly, I would say is that when you go digging around in the past, you've got to be prepared to deal with what it is that you uncover and the stories and the horror stories that you hear about people finding out that their dad's not their dad, or they've got a sibling that they never knew about, or, you know, so they can be shocking, the things that you find out. But there have also been rays of light through all of this, and meeting some of my relatives, Auntie Jan, who was my dad's half-sister, Stephen Stanaway, who was my dad's half-brother, on Montague, my birth grandfather's side. You know, meeting them has been really interesting. And having a journey of discovery in terms of the Māori ancestry has been really interesting too. So there are pieces of light amongst the darkness, but you've got to be prepared to work at it and receive what you find.
As it says in The Merchant of Venice, that the sins of the father are to be laid upon the children for generations, I think, according to the Bible. So we carry weight, and is it just genetic weight, or is it the presence of the past in our heads? Is it not just markers on a genome? That's the big question, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. I mean, I'm constantly weighing up in the book the percentages, or the you know, the 50% of genes come from mum and 50% from dad, so then there's 25 from this ancestor, and I'm always trying to work out these ridiculous sums to try to figure out who the hell I am. Honestly, I went around in circles. But ultimately, I believe that choice is a really big part of my life, and you are influenced by DNA. There are certain things that I've found out about my birth grandmother that I think, oh, maybe that's a bit like me. You can't escape DNA, but nurture and the way that you're brought up is really impactful. But ultimately, you as a person have a choice over who you are going to be in the world.
Yeah. And you made that choice. You found it hard. It's interesting because on the front cover, a quote from Dame Fiona Kidman, it's a very brave book. It is a very brave book because a lot of people would never have wanted to unearth what you've unearthed and would never have wanted to deal with it. But I imagine the pain was so great you had to.
It was like I had to somehow piece it all together so that I could move on in life. And I'm just so grateful and so happy that we as a family are in a great place now, and my kids are happy and I'm fulfilled and happy too. But yeah, there were some dark times, and those are things that women, again, and maybe men too as parents, don't talk about. You know, we don't talk about those dark times where we, you know, snap at our kids and yank them out of the bath too hard, or we wonder why ever the hell we had kids in the first place. You know, all of those things that we feel briefly like flashes upon us that we just then feel so guilty over, these are things that all mothers, well, most mothers seem to have experienced, and I've heard from a lot of mothers that that's the case. But there is a way through it.
Yeah, and there are reasons for it, and deep ones. Very good to talk about your book with you, and well done, and gee, it took courage to write it. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Jim.
CarolynBarronAuthor.com is Carolyn's website, by the way.